Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs.
So, of course, so we leave there with, they say, 2 days. We know it's going to be a couple of weeks. It actually turns into 2 months. And still every day, we're doing the same thing that we were doing with Nick, because that's all we can do to manage through this. And I'm on the phone every day. I made it my full-time job to call every single person that was part of this process, saying, okay, great, you've completed the step. What's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step?
Hello, Bravies. I'm your host for this episode, Susanna Peace Lavelle, author, life coach, and advocate for disability families. I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Jessica Pate, Brave mom and founder of the nonprofit We Are Brave Together. On this story episode, we hear a true story from a moment in the life of a caregiving parent. Today's story comes from Wendy Ernzen, whose daughter, Nicola, lives with autism and bipolar disorder. In her story, Wendy shares the profound and complex journey of raising a child with significant support needs. She reflects on the challenges of navigating the education system, moments of crisis that forced difficult decisions, and the deep compassion required to understand behaviors that others may not see with the same lens. Wendy also speaks so honestly about the importance of caregiver support, the need for community, and the radical act compassion it takes to keep showing up for our children and ourselves through every stage of the journey. After Wendy shares her story, Jessica and I sit down with her to talk more about navigating crises, advocating for support systems, and finding meaning, connection, and even moments of joy along the caregiving path. A quick reminder to rate and review this podcast, share episodes with your friends, follow us on social media, and check out our episodes posted weekly on our We Are Brave Together YouTube channel. And now I will let Wendy take it from here. Enjoy.
Picture this. You're sitting in a doctor's office and you're waiting for your appointment to begin. You've just recovered from COVID and you're still so deeply exhausted, but you finally carved out 1 hour to take care of you. And then your phone starts buzzing with so many texts. Things like, she's having a meltdown at the restaurant. I'm trying to get her into the car. We'll meet you at the house in 10 minutes. Can you be there? That was me 4 years ago this June. My daughter Nicola was with her caregiver so I could make that appointment. And the plan was really simple. She's going to go do some of her favorite things. She's going to lunch at a Coney Island. She's going to have a stop at Five Below for coloring books. And she was going to get to practice her everyday skills like ordering lunch and using her debit card. And it was just going to be for about an hour. Now, something that you may not know is that Nicola is diagnosed with level 3 autism and bipolar disorder. And what that means for her is that she needs 24/7 support with daily life. That could be things like cooking or showering, making safe decisions like even crossing the street. And when Nicola feels safe, she is joyful. She loves basketball and bowling. She loves Disney and Star Wars. She loves holidays of every kind, and she loves to introduce herself to everyone she meets. And she'll say, hi, I'm Nicola. What's your name? And we sometimes even call her the mayor. But when she feels overwhelmed or dysregulated, it can look very different. She may yell or swear. She may throw things. Sometimes those things are small, and sometimes those things are big. And she may even threaten people who are around her. Now, at the time of that appointment, our family had already been in crisis for months. For 6 months leading up to it, Nicola's episodes have been escalating. So she'd been having bouts of aggression. It was just really difficult. For 3 months, we were navigating a major medication change, hoping that this would help with her episodes. For 2 months, under medical guidance, we were using an emergency medication to help bring her down. And we would do that while the rest of us would lock ourselves in our rooms until she could calm down. And a month earlier, Nicola had just finished high school, and we were super excited for her. She'd even started a new transition program, which would help her find a job. Now, weeks before, we'd all had COVID and we were super exhausted. And despite working closely with her care team, things were still not improving. So that day when I got all those texts, I rushed home and I relayed the caregiver, and she left. Nicola, and she was still so angry. And she looked at me and said very calmly, I'd like to hit you right now. My heart just broke. I knew that this wasn't Nicola's fault. I knew she was not choosing this. Yet we still didn't understand how to meet her needs in a way that actually worked for her and for us. And no matter how hard we tried, no one had answers. We also knew the system pretty well at this point. My husband had served on an autism nonprofit board for years. I'd worked alongside families navigating these same systems. Our family had been working with our community health provider for 15 months. We knew that we were in a crisis. And within crisis, the only door here in our state that reliably opens is the emergency room. But we also knew that that door doesn't often work. So we tried everything else we could first. We've been working with their case manager, like I said, for over a year with no housing options for Nick. The county crisis center turned us away after Nicola became overwhelmed and staff were injured while they were trying to restrain her. And we were told, you do need to take her to the ER. That's your only option. So eventually, with police officers trained in crisis intervention, they helped us de-escalate the situation. Nicola did agree to go to the emergency room. At that time, only 4 facilities in our entire state would accept someone with autism as a primary diagnosis. And that was only if a bed was open. So we spent 6 nights there, very little changed, and no beds opened. And we were discharged because there was nowhere else for her to go. But because we had been in crisis, she'd had an incident that had happened in the community. Her case was escalated, but it still took 2 more months to secure housing. And she required that with 24/7 support. And the only reason why that finally happened is because we had constant vigilance. We were working on this every single day to make sure that she could find that placement. And every day was a struggle for our family, especially Nick. But she did eventually receive her housing placement, and we were super grateful. And that's why stories like ours matter. When families like mine, when our stories aren't visible, people don't understand why we need help. They don't understand why 24/7 support is necessary. And they don't see why, quote unquote, trying harder simply isn't an option. So I believe we need to tell more stories more often, because when people truly see what families live with every day like ours, that's when real change becomes possible.
Wendy, welcome to Brave Together podcast. We're so happy that you submitted a story. We love, love, love having moms and dads and siblings share their stories on the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here today. So thank you both for having me here.
I feel like we're, you know, the 3 of us are all one and the same. I love story episodes. For me, are some of my favorites because honestly, no matter, you know, where you're coming from, what circumstance, situation, where you are right now, and whatever season is true and real for you right now, I feel always just so less alone. I always feel like I'm meeting a new friend, Wendy. So hello, friend.
Hello. And I agree. It's so good to not feel like you're alone, and because we're not. And we actually are all going through this human existence with kids, some with needs, some families that need more support. And we are here for each other. And then you can kind of normalize some of the stuff we go through that, you know, this it's okay that it's not exactly what you expected. And it doesn't mean it can't be meaningful and joyful.
That's great. That is, that's it.
We are in sync. We are definitely in sync.
I love it. Love it.
Well, this is a great way to start. And Wendy, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit of your personal story and what led you to writing your story?
So I'm married, happily. I've been married for 24 years and I've been with my husband for 26. His name is Bill and he's awesome. And I like to start with that because I don't know how much you guys know about with the special needs community, there's a lot of people that get divorced. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making life change. You may not be making life and death decisions every day, but you're making life changing decisions every day. And you have to be on the same page all the time. And that either keeps you together and brings you closer or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very happy that we've been fortunate enough that we have made that through. And we have 2 kids. We have Nicola and Francis, and Nicola goes by Nick. And they're 23 and 20 respectively. Francis is a sophomore in college and they are doing some really incredible things. And Nick is also doing some incredible things. But to tell you a little bit more about her, so Nick happens to have autism and bipolar. And what that means for her is that she needs 24/7 support. So that could be things like cooking, safety. She might need some coaching, getting dressed. She definitely is coaching when she's showering. God love her. But she's just telling you like, she needs some guidance here and there. So, but she needs it. She needs that constant reassurance and support. And she's amazing because she has like cool hobbies and interests. Like she loves Disney. And with Disney, she likes a lot of the bad characters and the good characters. She's a big fan. She's a big fan of villains, let me tell you. And then, of course, she likes sports. Like she likes basketball and she likes to play. She likes swimming and she loves to go to the movies. And she certainly loves going to restaurants.
And that's what we talk about on this podcast. We talk about extreme caregiving. We talk about, you know, just the hypervigilance and being on. And your story is absolutely in line with that, Wendy.
Right. And then it's like, how do you feel? I know it sounds cliche, but how do you fill your own cup? Because otherwise you're going to always be operating from a place of depletion, right? So it's like I have this thing that I do in the morning and I call it, I don't know, I guess I call it like my foundation of blocks or whatever, but it's basically, I've got a list of 15 things that I could do. Doesn't mean I do all those things, but I could do those things. And so they're just, I know they're just things that make me feel grounded and ready to face, not race, but ready to get started with the day. Right. And so because I actually don't treat it as this is what I do every single day, I think about instead of a to-do list, it's my get to-do list. It's like these things I get to do. Like for example, I get to go to the gym because my whole body is working and functional. So I'm able to walk to the gym and use all the equipment and I try to frame it that way. But the point is though, is I still am trying to set that time aside for me. And I feel like as caregivers, we just like, we want our kids to have everything. Right. And so we don't want to miss an opportunity. And I feel like that's where a lot of the hypervigilance, and then of course, Jessica, with you, it's safety, but like, you just don't want them, you don't want them to miss out. You want them to have everything because you want them to have this beautiful life, whatever that is.
I'm just curious, like, how did you come to the place of, you know what, it's okay for me to take a few minutes or an hour to take care of myself, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, you know, relational, you know, making sure you have time with your wonderful husband, Bill, or with life-giving friends? Like, how did you come to the place of like, oh, this is okay for me to do, or this is necessary for me to do without feeling the guilt? Because we hear, Suzanne and I hear all the time how guilty moms feel if they step away from caretaking to take care of their own mental health, which is why our organization exists, is to give people permission and tools to take care of their mental health.
I'm going to get real with you guys. I waited till I had a personal crisis. And so then my body told me what I needed to be doing. Yeah. That's why I had a panic attack, thought I had a heart attack. That was the first time. And then Nicola, which we're not, I know we'll talk about that story, but Nicola also, then she went through a period of crisis, which then had my second, like basically like, I'm sure that for a long time, my body had been throwing pebbles at me, but these were bricks. So I waited till there were bricks being thrown at me. And that's when I actually started to listen. And I'm very lucky though, because it wasn't something I couldn't come back from, but now I honor it. And my boundaries are very hard and fast.
No, but tell us more about Nicola and more about Nick. So you were talking about, you know, how she just loves to share her ideas and she's so sure of what works for her. And tell us sort of the journey with her to where she is now today.
She was not an easy baby. So she didn't like to sleep. She wouldn't nap. I was a first time mom. So I didn't know what I didn't know. She had lots of ear infections. So then she had lots of courses of antibiotics. And then she had a lot of delays. Still on time, but always like under the wire. So like walking at 15 months, you know, first words somewhere between 1 and 2, things like that.
We are going to take a brief break. Stay with us.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, brave friends.
And we were fortunate enough at the time that she was in a preschool, like probably we were starting Montessori. You could start at like 18 or 24 months. Maybe that's what it was. And at 2.5 months, her teacher's like, or she's 2.5 years. And she's like, I'm just going to tell you, like, this isn't, she's being very nice and gentle about it, but she's like, this isn't typical development. You might want to talk to your pediatrician about it. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Whatever. Talk to the pediatrician. She's like, I guess. She's like, here's a recommendation. So I went to see a developmental pediatrician and she's like, yep, your daughter has what's called a global motor delay. It just meant that she was delayed in a lot of motor areas. And then, and I'm like, oh, well, what does that mean? And she's like, well, I don't know. It could mean lots of things. And she's like, now you need to start the journey. And I didn't know what any of that meant, but you know, now you see neurologists, you see a psychologist, you see PT, you see speech, you see. So we started that. And so for her here in Michigan, her initial diagnosis was PDD-NOS, which basically means they didn't really know, but it's pervasive developmental disorder, otherwise not specified because they just don't know. But basically now it's autism. I mean, we know that now. Mm-hmm. So, but we didn't know that at the time. So we continued to see all these specialists, but then we'd started speech. We started speech and OT. And we did it in the home because insurance didn't cover it. Mm-hmm. So, and we did ever in a specialized preschool. So we did that. Yeah. So we just continued that process. And then somewhere around 7, she finally got her formal diagnosis, even though now you would say Nicola has profound autism. So it's not like it's like, you know, it was pretty obvious. And so then it got kind of bumpy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, cause at this time I'm managing my career and being her mom and my husband traveled. So we made the decision that I would stay home because she needed lots of therapies, lots of care. Mm-hmm. And we'd also had a second child. We're like, well, this might work out great. Cause then I'm home with both kids. So we do that for a while. And so then we actually were in the schools and they just didn't have enough resources. And I'm being very generous, but we went through an 1 year long IEP process. I think we spent about 12 hours. We had to hire an advocate, trying to figure out what we could get out of the schools. And it turned out we couldn't get what we needed for Nick out of the schools. And she's being taught in a closet with a parapro. So that's where we were at this point. And I'm picking her up from school. Like every, you know, this is part of the reason why I'm not working. You know, I'm picking her up from school like every third day and, you know, cause there's all these disruptions with Nicola and her behavior. And this is, let's be honest, guys, this is not Nicola. This is not a Nicola issue. Okay. We know that this Nicola is trying to communicate. We know a lot more information now. This is also, I'm gonna date myself. This was 20 years ago. So, or 15 years ago. So by that time we end up bouncing around school. So we were fortunate enough. They're able to move. We go to a new district. She's in each district a couple of years and then they're like, nope. Nope. And so she kept being moved because there was no, how do I explain this? It's basically, it's almost like we got, went from general ed to more specialties to specialties. It's just none of these folks had an autism room. So she'd be like in a resource room. She'd be in an IE room. I'm going to say this right. Is it CI? I'm trying to remember all the ones, but you know, they're different rooms for lots of different kids with different IDD, not necessarily just autism. So finally, around sixth grade, we get to her eighth school, and now she's in an autism center. It was a gift. She was there till she graduated from high school. She had a magical team. They got her. I wish she had been there her whole time. And what we didn't realize as parents is we needed it too.
Yeah.
Because we were doing so much of this on their own. And so I have a podcast. And the reason I mention this is that a lot of the parents that come on my show who talk about having been figured out like really good support when their kids were little, because they ended up finding this like great group of parents and maybe some teachers and other people when their kids are really young and they go through the whole school. So then they got like, it's not like perfect, but they've got a solid group of support. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have that. And so finally we got that when she was in sixth grade, it was a blessing. So, yeah. She stayed there again until she was a senior in high school. She played basketball, like on their unified team, which is for kids mm-hmm. with needs. Mm-hmm. She did some cool things with like, oh gosh, I forget what they called them, but they would have like students who were from general ed that would like her buddy system. And she had some folks that would help with that. And, you know, she learned some skills for work to get her prepared to go to transitional program after. I don't know if you guys have transitional programs mm-hmm. for your yep. kids are. Okay.
Yep.
So here you can go to school till you're 26 in
what?
The transitional program. Yeah.
Wait, no week. No.
Wait, what?
Most of it's 21, right? Most states, I think
21 or 22.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Here in Michigan, you can do till you're 26.
Susanna, mind blown.
It's a blessing. That's why when they said to us, they said, you need to make the decision. Is she going to graduate? Like, are you going to pursue graduate certificate, or do you want to get a certificate of completion? And
yeah.
we weren't sure. It was clear to us by the time she was a freshman that was the road to go for her. But we're like, wow, that gives her so much more support for a longer period of time.
Yes.
Yes.
Gosh.
Yeah. And so, but the cliff still exists, my friends, the cliff still exists at 26. So I will tell you that it's really just kind of kicking the can a little bit. So, but you get a little more time for your kid to settle into, you know, before it's the support's out or support's gone. So we did that. Mm-hmm. And so then I would take you to our story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Nick had always had, you know, it's part of her, I think it's really part of her bipolar, but we don't know exactly what it is, but mm-hmm. she would have times where she just needed more management, more support. Her anxiety gets higher. And when her anxiety gets higher, like when she's feeling unregulated, we'll say, it's because she's feeling really overwhelmed. And then she might start to swear, and then she might start to yell and throw things and break things. And so what had happened was, I think part of it was because she was also transitioning from her high school program. So this wonderful program she'd been in for 6 years, and she knew that. And she, and we were still done, like we're still doing this large transition with the new program, right? The program she can go till she's 26. So it's not like we just said, hey, you're going there, but we're doing this for like 6 weeks or 2 months with the both sets of teachers. But I think Nick knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And at the same time, being that age, I think she needed a different medication because sometimes that happens. And so over a 6 month period, it was, it just, her episodes got more intense and they started to escalate. And she'd already been on, I think she was on 3 prescriptions at that time. And so the answer was to give her Ativan.
As a rescue med?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then it's on a daily basis. Like this is where we get to. And so now, because she's, at this point, she's breaking, throwing things every day. We're barricading ourselves for 2 hours. Our other daughter's barricading themselves for 2 hours till Nicola can calm down. And because you give her the Ativan and then you let it run its course because that's all you can do. So then we're like, okay, well, we can make it through this. It's going to be okay. Cause I don't know about you guys, but you're kind of like a frog in boiling water, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's just like a little bit and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, what are we doing? Like, what is happening? I've got like noise canceling headphones. And I've got my dog in here and my husband next to me with his noise canceling headphones. We're waiting for our kid to basically fall asleep because of the medication we just gave them. So we do this and then we all get COVID. What happens is then you're very flimsy infrastructure system that you set up is now completely gone, right? You can't have any caregivers. You have no respite. You have no support. Mm-hmm. So then I got it like last. So my husband didn't get it, but the three of us, the rest of the two kids and me, we all got it. And so I was the last one to get it. And so I needed to go see my doctor one day. And I was fortunate enough because Nicola at this point had been like, had it like 4 or 5 weeks prior. So we talked to our caregiver and she's like, yep, I can come take Nick for like 1 hour so you can go to the doctor. I said, great. And we took her, she was taking her favorite place. Nick loves to go to the restaurant. So Coney Island here in Michigan is like her favorite thing. And she's going to go to Five Below because she loves to get stuffed animals and coloring books. And that was, she could use her skills so she could order at the restaurant using life skills and also using her debit card. And she got to the restaurant and she went behind the counter and started throwing dishes and glasses and shattering things and scaring everybody who's in the place. And so the owner comes over to our caregiver and he's like, listen, he's like, you need to get her out of here or I'm going to have to call the police. So then my caregiver's frantically texting me and she's like, you got to meet me. You got to leave. I know you're waiting for your doctor's appointment. Cause I mean, I think I've been gone maybe 15 minutes at this point.
No.
And I said, okay. So I leave my doctor's appointment course, I come home. I relieve my caregiver, thank her profusely, pay her. She leaves. And I turn to Nick and Nick says, I want to hit you right now. And as a mom, and even thinking about it now, because it just makes me get so teared up, like, right, this is her unsupported. That's what's happening here. And I was so frustrated because at this point, not only had we had the 6-month escalation, we've been trying for 15 months to organize her housing placement with our local community health provider, and it got nowhere. And unfortunately, we knew too much information because we'd also, my husband was on the board like of one of these large organizations here in the state of Michigan. So we'd heard about what happens when people go to the ER, to the emergency room, but that's the gateway to mental health here in Michigan. You have to go through the emergency room to get help. So we kind of been avoiding that step, but now it's built into the community. And we're like, now what's it going to take? Is Nick going to get hurt? One of us going to get hurt? Is our caregiver going to get hurt? Somebody in the community, you know, somebody when Nick's out there, I'm like, we can't do this to Nick. We can't do this to us. There was a few things we did. We started with our, and I think I mentioned this to you guys. We started with, there's like a crisis center here in the county. So we started there and we started going through their process and apparently it was too slow for Nick. And she wanted to leave and she was done. And two orderlies came out to stop her and Nicola doesn't want to be touched. And they try to subdue her. So then she lashed out. They brought two more and then two orderlies end up getting injured. So then they said, I'm sorry, you need to leave. You need to go find a different emergency room. So we said, okay. So that was on a Saturday because this is the same day that the incident happened at the Kona, at the restaurant. We immediately took her there. We said, okay, well, I guess now we need to go to like an official hospital ER and go through the process because we're trying to avoid that. We're trying to make it a little easier on her. So the morning we decide, because we had to make arrangements. We have our other daughter. We have work. So we make arrangements because we know how long we're going to be there. So it's Tuesday morning, I think it was.
And how old is Nick at this point?
At this point, Nick's 19. She's 19 and she had just completed school. And then we all had just had COVID. So, you know, Nick's still like, I mean, she's not sick or anything because I mean, it's been like 5 weeks, but she's still tired, you know, and just like, anyway, you're going to be grumpy after that. Well, she takes grumpy to a different level when she's also not being supported in the ways that she needs to be. So we're like, well, we need to take you to a doctor. She's like, oh, no. I mean, in her own words, she's like, I remember what happened on Saturday, so I'm not going. So she starts breaking everything and shattering things. And then she eventually retreats to her room. Bill and I are like, gosh, I don't know what we're going to do. Cause I'm like, cause she's also bigger than me at this point. Cause she's 5'4", I'm 5 foot. She weighs 170 pounds. I think this time I don't. I could talk about my weight.
or not.
Well, and we know how Nick feels about being touched and being forced to do something she doesn't want to do. We don't want to do that to her. So like, what do we do? So at that time I call our local police department on their non-emergency lines. I'm saying this in case anybody goes through this process. You call their non-emergency line. And I knew they had this new program just because of the work Bill and I had been doing in the community. And they had a mental health professional was now helping the police department for things just like this. And I said, hey, is this person on staff? What do you guys recommend? I obviously don't, you know, want to put anybody in danger, but what's the steps? Mm-hmm. So they said, well, you know what happened? We happen to have two of the police officers on site that have been crisis intervention trained. So it's called CIT. And they said, let me talk to the chief and we'll send them over. I said, great. So they sent them over. Nick wants nothing to do with them. So she's in a room and she's got, my daughter loves stuffed animals. That is her thing. So she's got probably 100 stuffed animals all around her on her floor, all looking at her, but she's got them all situated the way she wants. And she's not talking to them. Like, hey, Nick, you know, trying to have a conversation with her. So then the one police officer starts talking about her Disney movies. He's like, hey, this or whatever movies. Cause he's like, that's from Shrek, which I know is not Disney, it's Pixar. And then he's like, this character's from, you know, this is Sully from Monsters, Inc. And he's going on. He goes, my daughter loves these and blah, blah. So they build this rapport with Nick over 45 minutes. And finally she agrees to go and she's excited. And they give her like a little like badge and like whatever. And it was great. So I will tell you, like, you never, hear those good stories. I want you to hear that good story. It was a great story. Yes. And we are so, so grateful. And I even went on their podcast at one point to tell my story, because this program now has been so successful. They've now rolled it out through our entire county. Wow. So it's just, it's magic. So anyway, so we get to the hospital, they help us, they escort her in so she go right into a room. That's all wonderful. And Bill and I were so grateful. But then we were there for 6 nights and very little changed. And very similarly, just like when we go to any kind of school meeting, I can't think of the term when they not admit you, the opposite, they want you to leave the hospital. I forget the term.
Discharge.
Discharge.
So we're in the discharge meeting. And so Bill and I, nothing has changed. We're going to go right back to where we were. This is why we're here. Yeah. What's next? And we've got 10 people sitting around us, just like we're in IEP, right? So we've got the doctor and the psychiatrist. And by the way, Nick's psychiatric care while she was in the ER was with an iPad. I don't know how your kids are about iPads, but that didn't really work well. So that person, I think, is on an iPad, whatever. So we have all these people in this room, including community mental health now. Now they're on board because they're like, oh, you guys in an instant and you're at the ER. I guess we're going to now come to your meetings. So that's when it was. So Bill and I pushed and we're like, well, she cannot leave here until we have something new. We need something different. And so they finally escalated our case. Okay. We said, that's interesting. So what does that mean? Because that's all new information for us. Like, well, that means that she's going to get on a path to having housing sooner. And, you know, we've seen it happen as quickly as 2 days. And we're like, okay. So of course, so we leave there, they say 2 days, we know it's going to be a couple of weeks. It actually turns into 2 months, and still every day we're doing the same thing that we were doing with Nick, because that's all we can do to manage through this. And I'm on the phone every day. I made it my full-time job to call every single person that was part of this process saying, okay, great. You've completed the step. What's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? And that is, you know, the only reason why she got her placement. And now she is on a campus. She's in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which, by the way, is a beautiful city. She lives on an autism campus. She is not, you know, sequestered or anything. She's not institutionalized. I mean, she goes to her transition program. She can still go there till she's 26. There's a library like around the corner. I can have Whole Foods because she's got her own apartment. So I can have Whole Foods delivered to her door if I want to. We get to go. And the thing that for Bill and I, we say this, we get to be her parents. Oh, so before I was her everything, right? I was her landlord. I was her transportation. I was her enforcer. I was telling her how to live her life. Now she can choose because they can't make her do things. She's an adult and they treat her like an adult. And she has the responsibilities of an adult. It's so hard to do that as a parent, to make that transition when they're adults in your house. I can't tell you the difference with her. Like, it's so wonderful. And she tells us that she's happy. So that's good too. Cause she, even though she has profound autism, she's verbal. She's very verbal. which is why she can swear like on cue when she wants to, but that's a whole nother story. But she's living on this campus now. And yeah, we're just so grateful. She's starting Special Olympics. Well, she started it last year, but now it's official. They're doing some new things with that this year, which I love, because I think Special Olympics is like this lifelong gift. Because as long as you're able, you can play till you're 90.
Stay with us, Bravies. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Brave Together podcast. I'm sure we're both chomping at the bit, Susanna, right? There's so much to comment on, but you know what? We don't hear enough when you talk about, when we've had guests talk about placement, or we just talk about it in general, is I now get to just be Nick's mom. When I think about, you know, Ryan someday being placed outside of the home, I get to be Ryan's parent.
That's right.
His parent.
Yeah. You get to go to lunch with him. You right. get to like shop with him. You get to like do all these cool things with him because you get to do that. And they love that. And you get to like take him to do fun things, you know?
Yeah. And I would actually have the energy to do those things. Whereas now I'm still like getting through the weekend versus like, oh, let's think of this fun outing. And I know there are a lot of moms who are really great at doing outings and being super fun with their kids or adult kids, but I'm not one of those. And admittedly, I'm so honest, but like, I look forward to that time where my
first of all, Jessica, I want you to not say it like that. You should not be guilting yourself because you do things or you don't do things. It is okay to not do those things. It is okay to actually choose yourself. It is okay to like do something different. I refuse to let us ladies feel guilty because we did. Yeah. We are doing so much. Yes. Something I was thinking about is that we do so much invisible labor.
Yes. Right?
And you know, if you're too damn tired to entertain, I think that's okay.
Okay. So. Thank you. I receive.
We need this reminder. And I think it matters the most when it comes from one of us, this reminder, because, you know, I have friends who are mothers who aren't extreme caregivers. You know, I mean, right? Motherhood is still motherhood, right? Obviously.
Yeah, 100%.
Jessica, you have two other children. I only have one child. You also have Francis. So that's a different experience. But I just really feel like this needs to become our mission, you know, in this life to just be like, yeah, I'm not the creative coming up with outings sort of thing. And, you know, look at all of the reasons why, because you are you've created this beautiful community of, how many moms do we have across the globe now? 3,000? And we are brave together?
Over 4,000.
Over 4,000. Yeah. See? Just, you know, the support there. We have our gifts, we have our talents. And I think it's really important, like you mentioned before, Wendy, to like set boundaries and to know what's good for us is good for the universe, period. Seriously. And I say that to Arizona all the time because, you know, that child with no filter is like, I need to take a nap. You know, my body can't go, right?
Right. And she's going to take that nap.
So cozily without guilt, you know what I mean? Wakes up from said nap. Where's dinner? Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. Because she's like, I'm clearly hungry. I know I am. And so that's what I would like right now.
I worked up an appetite with my nap. And then she told me this morning, she's like, Mommy, I decided after school every day, I'm going to take a nap. And I was like, fantastic. That sounds phenomenal. And then that gives me a little, you know, 45 minute break too.
Right.
So this is all working out for all of us.
Well, but I love what you're saying though, because it's a lot, like you're saying, Arizona's teaching us a lesson.
Yes.
Right. Arizona's saying my body feels this way. I'm actually going to listen to my body instead of my head. Mm-hmm. Because my body right now is telling me in this moment, this is what I need.
Right.
And I realize, honestly, it is so hard when you're constantly having to be hypervigilant and planning ahead and all the things you're describing to really tune into what your body needs. And I couldn't. I'm just going to be honest, with my daughter in the house, it was almost impossible. And it's not her fault. I want to be very clear about this. Yeah. It is not mixed thing. It's a symptom of just being a special needs mom or whatever we want to call it. But, you know, because the needs are so constant and they're immediate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, even while you were sharing a lot of your story, which by the way, the beginning sounds exactly like my beginning with Arizona. But I just felt like you were sharing your story. And I realized that I was holding my breath the entire time because I feel like my body keeps the score. Right? I mean, I was feeling exactly what you were feeling in those moments. And, I'm sort of at a cusp on the horizon with next program for Arizona, and we'll see how that goes. And I love that we have a plan starting in September. She graduates from high school this year. So
congratulations, mom.
Yeah. Congratulations to me. Seriously. Yeah.
Yes.
You got her there.
Oh, 100%. I definitely receive that. I mean, yes, thank you. Yeah.
Can I say something? Can I ask you something, Wendy? Completely shifting gears, because I feel like, and maybe this is just because I think about my own journey too, but like the way you've talked about Nick and her behaviors is with so much compassion and love, like she's, you know, unregulated. She was feeling unsupported, like going through the COVID era where like our kids were not getting the support that they needed, you know, by being at home.
The virtual world did not work for Nick.
No. During COVID. But like, what would you say to a mom early in her journey who's experiencing extreme behaviors with their child? Because I know for me, when I reflect back, and I'm in a better place, different place now, but like it activated my fear. And so I felt more irritable on a regular basis and less compassionate with the behaviors. And I think it's just only over time that that has shifted. And I just wish somebody could have said something to me earlier in my journey. I think it's really real to be afraid. Where is this going? It's also like, this is not the motherhood I signed up for. So it pushes the sad buttons, it pushes the grief buttons. And we may not be able to look at the behaviors and look at our child with as much compassion and high level perspective. What would you say to moms who are earlier in their journey and are dealing with these extreme behaviors?
So I'm going to take it even a different step, and I will come back to that. What I wish happens is that when you receive a diagnosis, that automatically support is offered to you. Because that does not happen. I do think I see it when kids are diagnosed with cancer or something really serious. They'll offer that to the family and the siblings, but they don't offer that. At least I didn't experience that. I think that they should. I'm not saying you're going to take it, but then you know it's there.
Yeah.
And so I think that's number one thing. You receive a diagnosis like that. You don't know. You have uncertainty. You're going to have grief. We all had grief, right? What life did you think your kid was going to live? Who knows? I don't know what that is, but it's definitely going to be different than what you thought. And so I would say that number one, so then I would say to that mom, if you're feeling overwhelmed and you don't have a community, that's where you start. Go talk to somebody that has an objective interest. They don't care if your kid is, you know, they don't care about any of this. If they just care about supporting you, you need to be supported. And that's what I would say from the get-go. I never did that. I will tell you, part of the problem is in my family, if you got mental health, there's something wrong with you. That's how I was brought up. And I lost my father to suicide because of that. And I still didn't recognize it though when I had all this stuff happen with Nick. And so that's the thing I always say is like, and I have now had support. So like when Nicola, you know, when I had my panic attacks, that's when I started seeing a therapist. And then even after she moved out, I received PTSD therapy. And I'm grateful every day because it also allows me to be compassionate with Nick, right? I'm not angry with her. I'm not dissociating from her anymore. I understand that a lot of this is her just trying to communicate.
Right.
And so that's probably the things that I would recommend.
I love all of that. I love all of that. I say, wouldn't it be, it is a radical act of compassion if the nurses, doctors, therapists, teachers, aides said to parents, do you have community?
Right. Yeah. And you don't have to say, do you need mental health? Because then people are like, something wrong with me. But yeah, the community work. Who's in your corner? Mm-hmm. You know, who are you bouncing ideas off every day so you don't feel like you're the only one in the whole world going through this, even though you know you're not?
Yeah, I think this should be a part of the annual physical for all human beings. All human beings. Do you have community?
I was asked in my physical when we were going through all this with Nicola during the crisis, they asked me, do you feel safe in your own home? And I said, no. And they didn't do anything about it. They just asked the question, checked the box. They said, is it your husband? I said, no, it's my daughter. And I told them exactly what's happening. Like, oh, that sounds terrible. I think they might have offered me medication, but that was it.
Okay. There's me.
And that wasn't that long ago, guys. Now I have a different PCP now.
Yeah.
And she's awesome. So, but yeah.
You know, I love what you have taught us today. you know, the reframe perspective, mm-hmm. that is what I'm gleaning from this conversation. It's, you know, I struggled with postpartum anxiety, depression, and then after the diagnosis, a different type of anxiety and depression. And in my family, we didn't even know about the word depression or anxiety growing up. It was just like, hey, well, then work harder, you know? But I like this reframe of, no, there's nothing wrong with me. And I do have some unmet needs.
We're not meant to go through this alone.
No. Well, just like you were talking about Nicola, she wasn't supported, right? She 100%. Didn't have the support in place for me as well. And that's what it is.
That's right. We need a village. I know it sounds cheesy and whatever, but we do.
Absolutely. No. I would not be sitting here right now had it not been for reaching out, finding community before I found We Are Brave Together in 2020, which is what I wish I had since, you know, Arizona was diagnosed 17 and a half years ago, right?
But think about this. So since you've had that, how different is your life?
Oh, Wendy, I am the happiest I have ever been,
right,
in my life. And I'm, you know, if you look at me, I am divorced and this.
Oh,
and
you're glowing too, girl. Right. You're glowing.
That might also be the vitamin D from playing tennis earlier. No, I just feel like everything is okay. Like everything is okay. I have my people and I know who to call and I know how to support myself. And I still have these moments where I'm like, literally, do I need to call another cardiologist just to make sure
mm-hmm.
my heart isn't failing me?
Yeah. Your heart's not failing you.
Well, we are at the end of our time together, Wendy, but I don't really want to leave. Is there anything?
Yes, you're so sweet.
Anything else? No, genuinely, like we live for this, Susanna and I. Like this is, I don't know, we're so lucky we get to do this. So,
well, yeah, I think we can also come on Let's Plant Houses.
I would love to have you guys on Let's Plant Houses because I just love telling the stories too. And mine's a little bit different because I want people to, they get to share their stories and they get to tell their moments and they also get to share their advice. And it's still pretty similar, but it's a lot of fun. And I wanted to do it, you know, once I realized part of the reason I think that we were even in our crisis that I talked about was because our stories aren't being told. Because, mm-hmm. you know, and so now what I want to do with that show is it's not only inspire people and so people don't feel like they're alone who share our lived experiences, but for those who don't, I want them to understand why we ask for what we do. Mm-hmm. Because how are you going to understand why we need the resources, why we need the infrastructure to operate differently, why we need the housing, why we need all these things for our kids? Well, when you actually hear the stories, then you'll understand.
Right. Wendy, where can everybody find you and find your podcast?
Sure. So you can find me. I'm on Apple and Spotify. It's called Let's Plant Houses. Yeah. And again, if anybody wants me on the show, just go to my website, www.letsplanthouses.com. And you can just email me. And you can also find me personally on LinkedIn. I don't care how people find me. Just find me. No, I don't care. There's no formal whatever. I want to just, like you guys, I just want to keep telling the stories.
Yep.
And keep celebrating people. Mm. So.
Well, thank you so much. This has been such a delight, Wendy. Thank you.
It's been my honor. Thank you for having me today.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in-person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. And we have published our first anthology of caregiving stories entitled Becoming Brave Together, Heroic, Extraordinary Caregiving Stories from Mothers Hidden in Plain Sight. It will encourage and validate every parent caregiver. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.